This is a spiritual reading being given for Bruno da Rocca on the 7th of December 2024 in Victoria, Australia, by John Rawson. We stand within the Hall of Memory, and the book of the soul is given into our hands. The book of the soul, Bruno, is a metaphor. It represents all the incarnations the soul has entered into since it first came into incarnation, hundreds of thousands of years ago. And interestingly, your soul came into incarnation quite recently, as we measure time. It came into incarnation in the latter part of the Atlantean period, and we will discuss more of this later. The cover of the book is white, but it is overlaid by a yellow-brown colour. And what that means is that your soul, when it came into incarnation, was pure, untainted, sinless. But when it came into incarnation, the energies and the spiritual forces of the earth penetrate into the fabric of the soul and stain it, as it were, by the concerns that attract us, magnetize us, if you like, to Earth. So what this really means is that, if I can put it as simply as possible, that in many ways you are an innocent. You would like to see the best in other people. You can be blind to what other people would see as obvious danger, and you, no matter what happens to you in life, you strive to see the best in the other person, and that's not always a very realistic thing, because sometimes other people are not the best that they could be. Indeed, your questions revolve a lot around relationships, and I can understand that at present, because at present you're going through a 2.5 year period, started a year or so ago, where you want to sort out what relationships mean to you in life, and particularly your primary relationship. So it's a sorting out period. And it will take another year or so before you really, this whole process comes to a stage where decisions and action will be taken and made. So there's not a great hurry at the moment to make life-altering decisions, but if you could feel that life, and life exists within us, particularly the energies of life are within the heart, and that they are unpacking and unfolding, a bit like a a flower going from a bud into full bloom. These life energies are just starting to evolve and come into flower. So there's no need to be hasty, but you can rely on your own perceptions. The white cover of the Book of the Soul indicates that you will try and be as honest with yourself as you possibly can. There are other qualities that we'll look at that later. The yellow-brown cover of the book indicates that from life to life, you have been forced to work for a living, or you've been forced into a situation where you've had to negotiate with the material world and the powers that rule the world, whether that's a boss, whether that's a society, whether that's a king, whether that's someone in the church. But you've been forced to cope with the overlay that the world puts on you, and that's difficult when your soul longs to express itself in purity. The Book of the Soul has two other attributes that indicate certain qualities in the soul. The first is a picture or an image, and the image shows a dove descending with an olive branch in its beak. Not a branch, but a little twig from an olive tree in its beak. And then below that, in gold lettering, is a title that I shall translate, at least at this time, as the Redeemer. Now, it doesn't mean that you're Christ, God Almighty. What it means is that from life to life, you will strive for redemption for yourself, but more, you want to assist other souls towards redemption. And redemption means recovering the purity of who we really are as spiritual beings. I'll say that again, because that's a very difficult concept for many people. But redemption means to recover the purity of who we really are as spiritual or divine beings. And we will probably find that from life to life that you have had lives, probably spiritual lives, where you have yearned to unite with the divine, yearned to unite with God, yearned to see Christ, perhaps. And it'd be interesting to see how the soul is weaving this theme into the current incarnation. And the dove, amongst many other meanings, is the symbol of peace and indicates that your soul has that quality of peace woven into its fabric. And so from one life to another, the soul will strive to create peace within its own life and within the lives of other souls. Not always successfully, but then that's why we keep coming back into incarnation until we have become completely successful, which for most of us is a long, long way in the future. I'm going to open now the Book of the Soul, and it opens to the current incarnation. And here the soul expresses itself on the right-hand side as a picture. And the picture is the colours of the aura, because the aura colours are the qualities that the soul has gathered and garnered from incarnation to incarnation. So therefore it represents the gifts, the talents, the flaws, the weaknesses. It represents the summation of who you are as a person in this incarnation. Now, I said as a person, not as an individual, because there is a difference. We live most of our lives as a person, as someone who reacts, interacts. But inside that person, or that behind that persona, is a seed of the divine, whether you call it the Christ self, the I am, the divine self, the Atman, the Buddha nature. It doesn't really matter at all, because it's beyond words. And it's the spark of divinity that throws out light into the colours of the aura, so that the more strongly that divine self can operate, the lighter are the aura colours. And the lighter the aura colours, the more perceptive you become, and the more understanding of self and others. The colours are nested in a particular order. So I'm going to give you the order first, so that Melody, when she draws the aura chart, has a chance to get them in sequence. And the first colour is purple. And purple's quite a dark colour, difficult to have as a first colour. We'll come back to that. The second colour, light yellow-brown. That's interesting, because light yellow-brown indicates an ability to deal with the world, to deal with finances, to deal with work, to study, to learn, to interact with the world in acceptable ways. Often people with this colour as second are good at business. They may not be millionaires, but they will always have enough money to get them by. And they can be quite shrewd about how to spend their money and how to save it. Then the third colour, green. Green is the colour of healing, but it also means lots of other things as well, which we will come back. It also indicates change. So when you have this colour prominent in the aura, you feel as though you need to change things in your life. And probably at the moment you feel you need to change your understanding of relationships, particularly the primary relationship within the life. Greens around the hands. That's really interesting. That's sometimes found amongst people who are nurses or doctors, or who have hands-on contact with patients, and all sorts of therapies that involve touch and touching. And funnily enough, also associated with music and musicians. Light rose from the shoulders. And the colour that emanates from the shoulders sweeps upwards behind us. And someone said rather beautifully, when we become angels, that will be the colour of our angels' wings. But in the meantime, it represents that which lifts you up. And the light rose indicates a love and desire and need for beauty, understanding, perception and intuition within the life. Blue within the head, quite a deep blue. Orange descending as a vortex, deeper reds around the gonads. Also the adrenals, the heart and the throat. And these darker colours indicate places where you have felt injured in this life. Perhaps you felt attached, so that you therefore become more vulnerable to the energies that they represent. So the deeper reds around the gonads indicate someone who feels great vulnerability on a sexual level. And it also indicates someone who would need to have sex in their life. You don't need to be a nun in this incarnation. You've been there before. But you can be vulnerable on that level. You can be hurt by other people. And we will look at some of the other positionings because they indicate energies that create pain within aspects of the life. The cosmic colours, as we see them at present, a very light blue above the head and a light pink below the feet. And the cosmic colours are not part of the aura, rather they represent energies that are lent to us by the cosmos at present, so that we are able to, if we perceive the assistance that comes towards us through the universe, as it were, then we will build these energies into our own aura, into our own soul faculties for the future, both this life and lives to come. There are two symbols within the aura which are very significant. The first is that the right hand holds a lance, and that is that the lance is held with the point upward. So it's not held to strike, but it's held upward to represent an energy. And because it's in the right hand, it probably means that it will come to you much more strongly in the future. Then the left hand hovers above a lamb, which stands looking out beside the left foot, and the lamb is a symbol of Christ, of course, as you would know. Then there is an overshadowing, and what I mean by that is that because of your activities in a previous incarnation, or perhaps several, that you have attracted to you, associated with yourself, this particular energy. And this energy we could call Mary, the mother of Jesus, if you like. And that doesn't necessarily mean that you need to do the rosary every day, although perhaps that wouldn't be a bad idea. But it means that the energy of Mary, which is to protect, nourish, and bring to birth, is very strong within you. And finally, the symbol of the overself hovers about 4 to 5 inches above the head. And the symbol of the overself is a communication from that seed of the divine. And it says to us something about what's going on in the life at present. And what it shows is actually the symbol of the dove descending with the olive twig in his beak. And really, what that indicates is that you're coming into a phase of your life where you will encounter, without question, the purpose, the spiritual purpose of this incarnation. Now, we're going to return to the first aura colour. The aura colour, purple, it's quite a dark purple, so it's very strong within you. And the dark, the fact that it's quite dark, indicates that you take your purpose in life very seriously. And because of that, it's hard for you, because you're very immersed in what you do and the way you express yourself, it's very hard for you to stand outside that and get an objective view of what's going on in your life. Purple is the colour of the mediator. It indicates an individual who assists other souls, sometimes organisations, to achieve something that they would not be able to achieve on their own. So the way it works out in this incarnation, it can work out in many ways. For example, well, very frequently it comes manifest as a counsellor or a therapist, because the counsellor or the therapist empowers the client to come into, to reconcile with the dysfunctional energies that are working within self. But there are many other forms of the purple. Purple can indicate someone who negotiates, who helps two sides see not just their own truth, but the truth that exists between them, and to come to a point of agreement, not compromise, but agreement. In older times, pre-20th century times, the purple would indicate a priest, and even today it indicates someone with a priestly nature, and indicates that you would have had incarnations, spiritual, religious incarnations. And I can see a number of these stretching back. But what I want to do first of all is I want to go to the original incarnation, the very first incarnation that your soul had when it came into incarnation. And as I've said, your soul actually came into incarnation relatively recently. And that is, it came into incarnation about 100,000 years ago in the later Atlantean period, not the final Atlantean period, sort of about the middle. And when it came into incarnation, if you can imagine a being from the spiritual worlds coming first into a physical body, how would that being relate to a physical world? And the answer is that it wouldn't. It would have no reference. It would be what we would call, trying to think of a polite, politically correct word for this, like a child that had no ability to think or perceive. Not like a Downs child, but like a child or an adult that had was total innocence and had no, could speak very few words, because their consciousness was still in the spirit. And you met this individual, and as I see him, he appears as quite a forbidding being. He's quite torn. As I see him, he's got a grey robe and he's got a cowl, a hood over his head that obscures his face. And he said that he could help you. He could give you the consciousness and the intelligence of that time. And he took you away from your parents, and what he did was he had sex with you, and you were young. So it was actually an abuse. He abused your innocence. But once he had sex with you, you were bound to him. And he didn't lie. You did, over time, you did, over time, acquire this layer of mental consciousness. But because you got it from this particular person, this particular individual, it came with a lot of negative energy. Now, that person, that individual, has been in your life throughout incarnation to incarnation. Always you've been drawn back to them. And the relationship that you've had in previous incarnations are characterized by probably a strong attraction on your part and almost an indifference on the part of this other person, almost to the point where they can seem totally self-absorbed, because in that initial incarnation, they created this relationship with you because you were useful to them. And indeed, they used you like a medium, because you were so close to the heavens spiritually, you could communicate with the higher spiritual powers, which was very useful to this person. You were like a clairvoyant or a medium who would leave their body and go into the spiritual worlds. Now, that relationship lasted for a very long period of time, about 300 years. And then the man, or who was the man in that life, died. He was killed in the conflict that arose, and your soul was ejected and couldn't enter into incarnation again for thousands and thousands of years. And then it came back, was brought back actually into a human body in the healing temple in Egypt about 3,000 or 4,000 years before Christ. So that's actually before what we know of the current Egyptian, or the archaeological Egyptian civilization. That before that there was a pre-civilization, if you like. And in the temple, you were brought back so that the soul was brought back so that it could inhabit a physical body. And it wasn't that you didn't have a physical body, but the soul couldn't connect with the physical body that it had. And so this time, through prayer, through sound, through colour, through chanting, through through aromas, through oils, through rituals, all sorts of things united the soul to the body. Now, interesting thing is that when you are healed spiritually, then you go from that experience with healing ability. So that even to this day, you should be a healer. You should be able to assist souls reconcile and adjust to the body. And from a spiritual perspective, much illness with the physical body derives, apart from karmic reasons, of course, but it derives from the fact that the soul cannot settle comfortably, cannot settle properly, integrate properly with the physical body, if you can understand that. And so many forms of healing are really simply the practitioner getting in touch with the soul, having a contact with the soul, perhaps a conversation, perhaps a healing conversation, so that the soul says, oh, yes, I should be in this physical body because I need this physical body to carry out my purpose. And in that sense, you would be the reconciler. Now, I'm not sure whether that's unexplored or unknown potential, but certainly you have have very strong healing ability. Incarnation in France in the early part of the 19th century, where you were in incarnation in a female body, you were in a convent in the south of France, and you were abused there by a monk who lived in the neighboring monastery. And again, it's a similar story to the life in Atlantis, where you were abused by the same figure, and he asserted a sort of a superiority over you. He was senior, he was quite old, wasn't young there. As I see him, he had silvery hair. Right? I thought monks were tonsured, but never mind. He's quite old. And you became pregnant, but he blackmailed you into saying it was the child of someone else. And so you blamed another individual, actually a priest who used to come and take confessions, and you blamed the priest, which is a bit of a blot on your karmic copybook. But the monk also insisted that you have the baby aborted, so that you were it was a very, very difficult life, a very extraordinarily painful life. You were still under the control of this entity, and again he seemed to have no feeling or no compassion towards you. But in that incarnation, you, as the nun, you were a devotee. Is that the right word? You had an enormous devotion to Mary, and the worst thing for you was that you had the abortion, because the Mary devotion created within you the urge and desire to be a mother. And so when you had the baby killed, that was a terrible, terrible experience for you. Now, this relates to this incarnation because you're with the same person, the same partner. And if it's the same person, if it's the same individual, you'll know this because the relationship tends to be all coming from you, that you're the one that's making all the effort. And the other person is happy to accept what you give them, and in fact may want to use you in some way, but isn't capable, perhaps it's an emotional thing, but isn't capable of responding on the same emotional level. To be quite honest, if I'm going to be absolutely blunt, You wouldn't ask the question about relationship and about leaving a partner if some part of you hadn't made up its mind up to do exactly that. And if there's no connection on an emotional, physical and spiritual level, you've got to have connections on all three levels for a relationship to really, really work. But if you don't have that connection, then what's the point of the relationship? As I've said, you're midway through 2.5 to 3 year period of sorting out your primary relationships, and that's going to be very strong next year. Around about May, things are going to come to quite a climax, and you'll probably find between about May and July that that you want to move forward. But when you get to July, round about then, you'll probably stop and you'll say, no, I don't think I can move forward, not yet. And so that things will seem to go back until about November of 2025, and then you'll make your mind up finally and you'll move. And it's going to be in some ways a really difficult period the next couple of years, but in some ways it's going to be very freeing. And also it's a time when you come to grips with the most primal and most hidden parts and deepest emotional energies that exist within you. But these phases, they last about 2.5 years. So once you've found your way through there, and you'll probably be dealing with between about 26, 27, around there, 28, around about there, you will be you'll be dealing a lot with life passages. People passing in your life into death, or people passing from one state of life into another. It's also an exploration of your own sexuality, and sexuality is very complicated. It's not just a biological imperative. It is, as we've seen, intimately connected with past memories. And, of course, it's intimately connected with the expression of love. So that I think you'll find that the next few years, it's like pulling a plug out of the heart. And that the heart will be free to flow and to express. There are a number of reasons, spiritual reasons, why we enter into relationships. And the first is that relationships are memories. They are karmic, if you like. So that we come into incarnation in order to balance the hurts, the harms, the grief, the pain that we've created with other souls over perhaps thousands of years. And that's the purpose of the current relationship. It's karmic. It's a need to balance. But it doesn't mean, balance doesn't mean that you give everything. That would be out of balance. Balance means that you bring yourself into balance. So if you are not in balance, then the relationship is not working. But if you bring yourself into balance, then the relationship has fulfilled its purpose, if you can understand. It's a bit of a paradox. As long as you feel grief, disturbance, anger, angst, anxiety within the relationship, then what's created that relationship is as yet unresolved. But we don't resolve relationship energies by giving everything to the other person and letting them have what they want. Every relationship has to create a balance. And the balance starts within yourself. When you are in balance, when you know what you want from a relationship, then you will be able to express this. And then you will be able to make a decision, because if you're not getting what you need, what you really need out of a relationship or a partnership, then that means the partnership is finished. And you don't make that decision from the emotions, from being upset, from being bitter. You make it from that point of view that you know what you need. And when you've reached that still small point, and it's very hard to do, because relationships, more than anything else, upend our emotional universe. But if you can find that still small point, the decision that you make from that is what will move you forward in life. It's not a relationship that determines whether you express your potential or live up to your potential. It's you. So if someone else or a relationship is not allowing you to be you, then the relationship becomes irrelevant in the end. But in spiritual terms, you're young. The soul, as we observe it, doesn't come in at birth. Rather, it remains outside the individual and sort of runs it remotely. Whilst the child grows, or the baby grows into a child, a toddler, and then the toddler grows into a young person, and then the young person grows into a teenager, and then the teenager grows into first stage of adulthood, which is between about the age of 21 and 30, the soul is running this from outside. And so that things happen to you that you seem to have no control over. You don't have much control over who your parents are, or at least it doesn't appear as though you do. You don't have a lot of control, perhaps, over what school you go to, what teachers you meet, all these sorts of things. Things happen to the person rather than being created by the person. But once you reach the age of about 29 or 30, the soul says, okay, it's my turn now. And it takes up the reins of the life. And over about 5 years, you will find that your own sense of self matures. Often so much so that people will say, wow, Bruna, she's a different person now. She's a different person. Because the soul's running the show. So that now you've passed the 35 years of age mark, that's a very important milestone, because at this stage the soul should be in charge of the program, should be running the life. And hence, the decisions that you make from here on in are soul decisions. Whereas the decisions that you made up until about the age of 35, or certainly till the age of 30, they were, they were the framework that the soul agreed to construct the person before you ever came into incarnation. So that you have all these life experiences up until about the age of 30, and that creates a personality. It creates gifts and talents. It creates a life path, or it seems to. Though when the soul comes in, the life path may well change completely. The yellow-brown colour That's the gift from this entity, this individual that you had the association with in Atlantis, that you would be able to connect with the earth. And that's still there. That you have the ability to work with the earth. In fact, you should work, make sure that you're working, growing things, that's possible. Get your hands into the soil sometimes. Although my wife just thought at me, that's not a good idea because there's harmful microorganisms in the soil. But think of it as a metaphorical thing. Bring beauty into the world through your hands. Interesting that the combination of light yellow and brown and green often produce musicians. So if you want to look at gifts and potentials, make sure that you always have music in your life. You had an incarnation in Spain about the 14th century where you were a gypsy and you danced in that incarnation. Actually, I've got the century wrong. I think it's about the 16th century, much later, because someone's playing a violin. But you danced in this incarnation and you flirted a lot. Difficult incarnation because you were killed when you were in Spain and on a particular property, estate, and the Duke, who was a nasty character, set his dogs on you to chase you all away. And you were killed by the dogs. When we have a violent death when we're young, that indicates that the energies, the life energies, have not fully been realized, so that they become available in a future life. And it indicates to me that you have the potential in this life to be very creative. And to be very to be very innovative, I think it's perhaps the right word. Yes, that you can push, you can create the envelope, and yet you have this life energy also that makes it very difficult because it's difficult for you to be proactive and to be assertive. Because if you push too hard, you'll end up, people will ignore you and reject you, and you'll end up feeling bitter. What you have to do is you have to wait for an invitation so you can put yourself out there and say, this is what I've got. But you can't go to someone or people and say, use what I've got, use me, I would be a great person in this role. You have to display who you are and wait for people to recognize you, and then you'll be able to use the gifts that are to do with managing other people, facilitating relationships, and assisting people, particularly within career, vocation, and with life problems. In that incarnation, you played the castanets, and you also played a little instrument that sort of had bells on it. And I think it would be great in this incarnation to be engaged again in music in some way. At least make sure you have music in your life and sing. It had a beautiful voice in that incarnation. But because of the way you died, you may find it hard to express yourself through the voice in this life. But singing, doing using the voice would release the energies that are blocked in the throat. And in so doing, it would reinforce your own will and your own sense of purpose. The Greens talked about also to do with change and healing. Had an incarnation in Egypt about 1200 BC, I think, where you were a priestess at a place called Abydos, associated there, I think, with Isis, the mother, the great mother, the great female figure, the precursor, if you like, of Mary. And that was a very devotional life in which you assisted people to bathe in the sacred pool for healing. And you also assisted them to have dreams where the goddess would come and give an impulse for healing. So again, the ability to mediate and facilitate healing and psychological or mental understandings. The light rose from the shoulders. Light rose is intuition. It's sensitivity. You're a bit like a snail when it's out of its shell. If someone comes and touches you on the eyes, they retract immediately, and you are so sensitive that another person can push you back into your shell. You need to use the light rose, I think, in the terms of what it's meant to be. And originally it was a sort of a clairvoyance, an ability to reach into spirit. So trust your intuitions. You may find that you have very meaningful dreams at critical points within the life. Take note of them. It's the soul talking to you. Interesting that you had an incarnation in America in the 19th century, around about the 1860s, I think. You were a medium in this life. Your name was Florence. You lived in Boston and you used to do seances for people. You were a very good medium, by the way. You used to channel especially soldiers who died in the Civil War. And you helped a lot of people, but actually the people who helped the most were the spirits of the dead. The ones who came to you because they needed to get a message to loved ones. And sometimes you were able to put them in touch with the people that they love. Sometimes those loved ones didn't even know that this person had been killed or died. So again, the figure of the mediator. And again, the ability to powerfully sense the spiritual worlds. The deep blues inside the head. That's great seriousness within the life. Blues are both freeing and also constraining. Because the blues in the head, it indicates to me someone who thinks very seriously. Someone who has spiritual thinking as their foundation. It's the blue can be depressive, as I've said, so it's great if you can lighten up, but something's coming to your life that will do that, but also gives the power to make serious decisions about what's going to happen in life. And also is a connection to spiritual thinking, that you have a connection to spiritual teaching, to incarnation in Russia, where you were associated, this is at the end of the 19th century, beginning of the 20th century, the early part of the 20th century, where you were associated with an occult school, an esoteric school in Moscow. And I can't quite see who the name of the teacher is. But I think that some of the students went to Brazil or to Peru. And this teacher taught in the Western esoteric spiritual tradition. That is, they taught about reincarnation, and they taught about the coming of the Christ within. That in that teaching, Christ is not something outside, but something that dwells within us as a seed. As St. Paul says, Christ is in us, the hope of glory. And at our present stage in evolution, Christ is in us as a seed. But if we work with that seed, if we work with our individuality, then that seed becomes a light that shines brighter and brighter. The vortex, the orange vortex, indicates that there's a strong entry of this Christ energy, the energy of individuality, and the energy of seeing yourself as a spiritual being, that will come in over the next 7 years. And that will change your life and your perspective on life to a very great degree. The colours, the influencing colours, the light blue overhead says that for the next 14 years, the spiritual worlds are available to you for advice and for insight. And the pink below the feet says, don't be afraid to dance. You danced in that incarnation as a gypsy. Don't be afraid to enjoy life. In fact, choose pleasure sometimes. Choose fun. Choose enjoyment. Because this is why we incarnate as well, not just to do serious things, but to enjoy the fun and the beauty and the wonder of the physical body, physical incarnation. The images in the aura, the first one underneath the left hand, a lamb stands, indicates your connection to Christ and indicates that in a past life. In fact, I can even tell you what that is. You incarnated in the first century and your parents were part of the school of prophets on Mount Carmel, which is where Mary gave birth to Jesus. And you were the handmaiden, if you like. So Mary was the handmaiden of the Lord. Well, you were the handmaiden of the handmaiden. And I know the biblical stories are quite different, but never mind about that for the moment. But you were there for the birth and you actually held the baby in your arms. And that connection with the Christ, and the reason that you could do that is because the soul is pure, as I've said. Beneath all the layers of pain, worry, concern, all this, the soul has a purity that was able to embrace Christ. And in the years to come, that will become stronger and stronger in you. And the lance that we see you holding in your hand, it has a name. It's called the Lance of Longinus. The myth, the legend is that it was the lance that the centurion Longinus used to enormous array of meanings. But what I'll say very briefly and very simply is that it represents insight and the ability to bring insight to other souls. And in the years to come, you will be able to make use of this instrument to bring enlightenment, openness, insight, and understanding to many souls. And that brings us to the symbol of the over-self, which is the dove descending. And that dove has two meanings. First of all, it's hope, because it's the dove that came back to Noah's ark and showed everyone that there was life and the floods were receding. So first of all, it indicates hope, and it means hope within your own life. Always be hopeful. Always know that you are worth something more, something greater. And the second meaning of the dove is redemption. And redemption means, as I've said, perceiving yourself as the spiritual divine being that you truly are. And when we have that perception, when that perception comes to us, then everything else falls away. And we're left with the last meaning of the dove, the third meaning, which is peace. The peace that passes understanding. And Bruna, I do see that there's a few waves on the ocean of your future. There's a few mountains to climb. There's a few valleys to descend into. But every time you descend into a valley, you will walk out the other side. Every time a mountain's placed in your way, you'll find a way to get around it. And I think that your soul is well on the path to achieving something which very few souls are able to do, and that is reconciliation, redemption of self and others, healing, and peace. And if you find that life takes you to all these mountaintops, then blessed are you, and blessed is the world around you that receives the gifts of your soul. So shall it be.